Let me start off by introducing the people that I have with me here. On my left, I've got to the far left, Commissioner Krish Kumar. I spent the whole morning with Commissioner Abraham. So I've got Commissioner Krish Kumar, who is a part-time commissioner and a local government nominee. And then I've got Commissioner David Savage, who is also a part-time commissioner and a national nominee. I have apologies for Commissioners Tanya Ajam, Lucy Abraham, and Nelly Shelley, who cannot be with us this afternoon due to prior commitments. They would have made it if we had stuck to the original time that had been provided to us, but unfortunately they couldn't switch their schedules. So their apologies, Chairperson, if you accept that. Let me then go to the presentation of the annual report of the Financial and Fiscal Commission for 2010-11. I think the first slide basically just describes what the commission is, and I don't think that we need to go through that. Let me move to the second slide, basically, that gives an overview of the Commission's activities. I think in terms of the legislative mandate, basically, the Commission in the past year actually met all its legal requirements. I must also say that in terms of the Commission's strategy and approach, which speaks to the Commission, we spoke about the research strategy of the Commission early in the year when we presented our strategic plan. We did highlight the research strategy that we have, which is a 5-year strategy, which we started implementing in 2008. The strategy has moved quite rapidly into the areas of the local government budget analysis and local government issues, and also it has moved quite rapidly in the implementation of economic modeling tools for the Commission. Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yeah, so I was saying that in terms of the legislative requirements, we met all our obligations. Also, in terms of our ad hoc types of requests that come in terms of the various pieces of legislation that enable the Commission's mandate, we also find that our response times to those have improved quite significantly, and those response times or those ad hoc requests have not in any way impacted on the Commission's long-term research agenda, and that's mainly due to the fact that we have put in place these modeling capabilities that and budget analysis functions that actually allow us to respond quite quickly to these types of requests. One thing that I can say is that there's also been quite a significant increase in the amount of work that the Commission's research team has been able to publish and also to present in conferences. And that basically assists this research team to be able to also be in touch with their own academic aspirations. Most of the staff that we have are actually people that have got academic inclinations, and for them to be able to be kept motivated in the kind of an environment that we operate in, you need to allow them to be able to publish and disseminate some of the technical work that they actually do. And we have seen quite a significant increase in the number of researchers that have been able to do that. There has been an increase, quite a substantial increase in stakeholder demand for the Commission's services, with a number of treasuries and municipalities requesting the Commission's assistance in one way or another. And I think the Commission very much welcomes that, because it's in line with the provisions of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act. And we are able to do some of those things, even though we have other challenges. Let me just say that, having highlighted these kinds of core issues, which constitute what we call the core business of the Commission, there are also other issues that we have had to contend with, which pose serious challenges going forward. Firstly, we have had an acting chairperson and chief executive officer, who is myself, for more than a year now. That kind of creates a bit of uncertainty in terms of what people think about where the Commission is going and what is going to happen next, and so that uncertainty is there. And as I'm saying this, that there's been an acting chairperson and chief executive. Now, the chairperson is the chief executive, which is quite a complex arrangement. And having been sitting in that position myself with no deputy chairperson in place, it becomes even more complicated, because you've got to deal with quite a number of issues in one capacity, and you must deal with them in another capacity, all on your own. It opens up, that kind of an arrangement opens up the Commission to serious types of risks. It's really a question of self-discipline that one is able to survive in that kind of a situation. You need serious self-discipline. Now, one of the issues that we've been discussing with the Minister and also with the Office for Institutions Supporting Democracy, is how we can actually deal with this particular matter, so that we can maybe find a way of separating the position of chairperson from the chief executive officer. There's also been the issue of vacancies in the Commission. At the moment, we have 6 commissioners. We are supposed to have 9 commissioners if the commission is fully complemented. So we have had the vacancies for quite some time now. I think the 2 vacancies, the one local government in particular, has been vacant since 2008, and the other one, which is the provincial government, has been vacant also in practice. Even though on paper there was supposed to be a commissioner, that commissioner never took that position, so it's also practically been vacant since 2008. That person finally resigned from the Commission at the beginning of 2011. But since 2008, they have not actually participated in any activity of the Commission. So the position was as good as a vacant. And then obviously the chairperson's position that's been vacant since September 2010. The other issue is that we have had a serious pressure on our budget, which is, I will speak a bit about that, and I think the CFO will talk about that as well, which has put pressure on the Commission's operations. We basically have a problem in dealing with our finance unit. We cannot actually fill the positions that we must fill, so we've had to take people internally and try to train them so that they can actually assist the CFO, because we don't have the kind of resources that would be required for the qualified people that are required to deal with the demands that the current legislation and regulations, treasury regulations around your issues like supply chain management and all of that, that we actually need for those kinds of positions. So we've had to deal with it in a different way. We have also, due to our budget pressures, have had to struggle with a very antiquated information technology infrastructure, and again, it's caused a bit of a problem. Now, let me just say that in terms of our report of the Auditor General, having highlighted what I consider to be the challenges and the successes, the report of the Auditor General basically raised three specific issues that I thought it would be useful to speak about. The first one is that the Commission received an unqualified audit, but there were matters of emphasis that were raised. The three key ones: the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which was a result of interest charges imposed by SARS. We lost an objection on this particular matter. The interest charges were lost because there was an assertion that the Commission had made its payment to SARS late. It then turned out that SARS actually corrected that in the end. It was their mistake, but unfortunately, you will see that it appears in our report, but it was reversed after the audit had been completed. So we only got the letter from SARS after the audit had been completed. We tried to communicate with the AG, but they said it was too late for them to adjust it. So that's something that we have let go. The next issue was irregular expenditure, which was incurred through the employment of a service provider who was unable to produce a valid tax clearance certificate. Now, this service provider basically was a service provider who was fixing what I have called our antiquated IT infrastructure. And by the time we realized that this service provider did not have or was not going to be able to provide a tax clearance certificate, they had actually gone too deep into the work. They were basically literally revamping the server system, and we realized that in during round about November or so, we sought opinion because we wanted to terminate the contract there and then, when we realized that they were not going to be able to supply us with the tax clearance, original tax clearance certificate, because SARS was holding their tax clearance certificate because of some problems that they had to resolve with SARS. Now, they couldn't provide us with that. We couldn't actually get rid of them at that particular point in time because of the nature of our business. Is that round about November to February, we can't afford to have our system not working, our IT system. So we requested advice from CETA as to what the impact would be of actually terminating that contract there and then, looking for a new service provider to actually continue, and then we also are able to continue with our normal business. That's the time that we receive all the budget documentation from the National Treasury and all of that. So we're basically working flat out on our submissions and the budget processes at that stage. So the advice that we got was that it would be too costly in terms of what the impact to your systems is going to be. So we decided to keep the service provider in place. We did not immediately terminate that contract. The contract, however, has since been terminated because we immediately went out and looked for a new service provider that we would then engage as soon as our own busy period was through. So we have since terminated that contract. That should not be an issue going forward again. Now, another issue that I want to raise, which is also raised in the AG's report as a matter of emphasis, is the going concern matter that is related to the Commission's accumulated deficit. I think it's about 3.4 million of an accumulated deficit. Now, this is an issue that is not being raised for the first time. It was raised in 2007. At that stage, the deficit was about 3 million. It was not picked up over the past 2 years because we did indicate that we were engaged in discussions with government and the National Treasury in particular to address that, because it was a deficit that had been accumulated over time. And we have been engaged in discussions with them to try and see if we can actually get that yet. It's really a question of the baseline of the Commission's budget that has not kept pace with changes in legislation that have expanded the mandate of the Commission, and therefore the growth in the size of the Commission has also contributed to that. So that is, those are the key issues that I thought I need to speak to up front. And then now I will let the Commission Secretary, Mr. Mashumi Mzaidume, who is sitting at my right, and I didn't introduce this to. Mashumi Mzaidume is the Commission Secretary, and Mavuso Vogwana next to me is the Commission's Chief Financial Officer. So I'll let them take you through the rest of the slides, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I'm not going to repeat any of the things that the Acting Chairperson has already said to
I'm just going to tell you those details that perhaps he has not had opportunity to deal with. In terms of the strategy of the Commission, the focus of the Commission during the period under review was on undertaking cutting-edge research which focused on innovation, the developmental impact of public resources, and providing stakeholders with coherent and appropriate ITFR policy advice. And with regard to research in particular, it was about the appropriate consolidation of public deficits and debt reduction, which were as a result of the 2008-2009 global financial and economic recession. And secondly, the focus was on the appropriateness of counter-cyclical stabilization policy. The third was the need for the creation of favorable conditions for economic development in the country. And finally, of course, and this is in terms of research, it was the need for government in the face of fiscal consolidation to focus more closely on fiscal responsibility, improving the quality of services, and paying attention to the issue of the unfunded mandates. And those were basically in terms of the research and our internal and our external environment. Internally, as the acting chairperson has already said, we needed to address the issues of uncertainty in the commission. He has already referred to the fact that he's been acting since September last year, and there are no present indications about when that situation is going to change. He has already referred also to the conflation of the positions of the directing and the executing authorities of the commission, which are antithetical to good governance. He has referred also to the shrinking recess envelope, which has forced us basically to reconsider the commission's delivery model, so that we can make better use of the resources that are available to the commission. The acting chairperson has already referred to the antiquated information communication technology infrastructure. I'm not going to repeat that. He has also referred to the increasing demands on the services of the commission because of, among other, changes in legislation. And in this respect, there were references being made to the money bills, the Amendment Procedures and Related Matters Act. He has also dealt with the 3.4 million deficits that were presently engaged with the National Treasury to try and resolve. One important issue, of course, is that we have ever-increasing costs of compliance. Of the Commission budget, 8% goes to audit fees. And that is a substantial amount, particularly in the light of the size of the current budget of the Commission. Now, going to what we have been able to achieve despite all of this, we have been able to table our 2011-2012 submission for the Division of Revenue in terms of Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act. We've responded to the 2010 medium-term budget policy statement. We've responded to the 2011 Division of Revenue Bill. We've commented on the 2011 Fiscal Framework and Revenue Proposals. We've also done the same with the 2011 Appropriations Bill. We have finalized research on the 2012-2013 submission for the Division of Revenue, and we recently tabled, May this year, tabled that submission before Parliament. And we last year tabled our annual report in August. And as the chairperson has already indicated, we've responded to all ad hoc stakeholder requests. going further, and this again speaks to what the acting chairperson has already referred to, commissioners and individual staff members have been able to publish technical reports based on the work of the commission in accredited academic journals, and and by so doing, contributed substantially to the knowledge base on IGFR issues. We have also shared experiences with the other African countries in discussions around their own intergovernmental fiscal relations system. In particular, in January and February this year, we actually were hosts to the recently established Kenyan Commission on Revenue Allocation. And in conclusion, of course, we continue as a commission to maintain a high profile as a best practice institution in the world in the area of fiscal decentralization. One final point, of course, is that we also sit as expert advisor on the Department of Health, on the Department of Education's Heads of Education Committee, HEDCOM it's called. We sit also on the subcommittees of Finance and Infrastructure. We sit on the Department of Transport's Road Coordinating Body, and we sit also on the Health Department's Data Advisory Group, and we are also participants in an advisory capacity at the Water Research Commission. Now, going to challenges, and again, I'm not going to repeat what the chairperson has said. I've already referred to the fact that we have the commission is in the process of revising its delivery model, and towards that end, we're busy with the organizational development processes and change management strategies. Our research program has not done as much as it could possibly do because of the research constraints, and of course that is not unique to us as an organization. Other institutions have had to deal with the limitations of resources, and towards that end, of course, we are trying to go into cooperation agreements, okay, collaboration agreements with other institutions which do work in the same area as the Commission. A matter of concern has been that there have been quite a number of cases where institutions that are supposed to consult with the Commission before taking particular actions have on occasion failed to do so. And this, of course, impacts on the validity, be it legislation, be it executive action. It impacts negatively on the validity of such legislation or executive action and can be challenged in court. I've already referred to the confession of the positions of the chairperson and chief executive officer. Some other issues, of course, that one would like to highlight are the lack of definition of executive authority of the Commission. The only definition that we have is the definition of executive authority for the purposes of the PFMA, and that is contained in the PFMA regulations of 2005. The acting chairperson has already referred to the unfilled vacancies. Another challenge that we're facing is the fact that the allowances that are payable to part-time commissioners have not been reviewed since 2008, and we see that there's a possible disincentive to some of the part-time commissioners to take part in the business of the commission. I've already referred to the cost of compliance, in particular audit fees, which take up 8% of the commission's budget. And the other challenge is that we've been trying now for the past year to reduce the size of our premises because of the budget pressures that we're experiencing. Unfortunately, this has not happened because there have been delays in some of the processes, particularly insofar as they relate to the Department of Public Works, through whom we have to contract when acquiring premises. This past year, the Commission undertook a perception and impact assessment survey, and the outcomes of that were, amongst others, that there are some incorrect perceptions about the Commission. And one of the things that we've been trying to address is to correct those perceptions, and number two, to make sure that the products of the Commission are disseminated to a broader group of stakeholders. Now, going to recommendations for 2011-2012, with your permission, Chairperson, I'd just like to say that I'm not going to go through them individually, because those have already been tabled and debated here in Parliament. I'll simply state that they covered the global economic crisis, the fiscal framework, and coping with vulnerabilities. The next one is this one. Our recommendations also dealt with social assistance reform during a period of fiscal stress. We also dealt with the design and administration of conditional grants and made some recommendations in that regard. The next one was this one. We also spoke to municipal revenue collection improvements, and we also spoke to the reform of the local government equitable share formula. We also, Chairperson, spoke to the regionalization of the municipal services, and finally commented on some intergovernmental fiscal issues in with respect to urban public transport. I think I'll stop there, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And
separateness of community and the ordinary member. I think it's just a part of the highlighted presentation before me. And I think it's very important also for the honorable members and also for the chairperson to be highlighted in terms of the strategic objectives, and which my colleague has already covered in terms of things that we have done, particularly in terms of what are the key strategic areas and the focuses that we have. This is just the summary of the actual outcome that came out of those main objectives that we highlighted earlier, the financial implication. You'll see that there's a variance of 3.8 in terms of meeting our mandate, but besides all those challenges that have been mentioned earlier, we are still able to meet the key mandates of the Commission. Coming to the financial highlights, I think the acting chairperson of the Commission has already highlighted that we have an unqualified audit report, and that has been going on for years. We never had any qualifications in terms of the report. But I think there are issues that have been raised as a matter of emphasis that our chairperson has gone through, and which most of those issues are coming up with some of the challenges that have already been mentioned earlier on in terms of the resource capacity that we need to have to face this, because of the staff members that we have, some staff members that we train within the Commission, and we couldn't have enough resources to get those qualified employees somewhere. And in terms of the financial performance and position of the Commission, which is our income statement and the balance sheet, these are the movements that we have in terms of the financial statements. Looking at our revenue, when you do the comparison between the 2 years, we had an increase of 16% on our revenue, but it has been a challenge because it's not the proper baseline correction. We have been negotiating with National Treasury even in this current financial year, which the negotiations are so positive that they understand the basis of our need to change our baseline allocation, but something that is going through. And then we've got an increase compared to last year of staff costs by 10%, which is another movement that is regard to the making sure that it's proper developing and attraction of skills staff members within the Commission, because the challenge is the technical work that they are dealing with. They need very high skilled staff members, and also that 10% increase also involves the inflation increase that you normally put to the salaries. And if you look at our depreciation, that our depreciation went down by 34%. It reflects exactly what the chairperson and the Commission Secretary has highlighted in terms of our antiquated assets. We have not been producing assets for the past 4 years because of the resources, especially the IT assets. And then in terms of the professional fees, you'll see there's 45% increase there because of one of the major challenges that has been highlighted earlier on in terms of the audit fees, which they amount to 8% of our total budget, and also some research costs for the Commission research that has also went high in terms of the technical advisors. And then we also realize that the chairperson has highlighted that there's growth in business in terms of the mandate of the Commission and also other stakeholder involvement that is needed. The effect there, you see, is a 20% increase on the administrative side of the Commission. As I said earlier on, our asset base has not been increasing. You see, it has went down by 9%. It's one of the challenges that we need to have to address the Commission delivery model. And then you'll see that our liabilities have went up by 42%. That's reflected by the need to change our baseline to get that capital injection, because what normally happens, we end up consuming on the next year's budget because of those challenges that we normally have. And then we look in terms of the total revenue that we have. The allocated revenue consumes 99% of the total revenue that we have, and the 1% of that revenue is other income that you normally receive from the bank, the interest from the bank, and so on. And then you'll see our major cost driver in terms of the finances, is our personnel cost. And then when look in terms of a division, FFC, we've got three divisions. We've got the commission, the support services, the RRP stands for research and recommendation program, which is the major cost driver of the commission. And then you'll realize that also in terms of the total cost that we've paid for these 7% costs, sitting at 19.6 million, which also includes our bonuses of 273,000. That's the breakdown that we have. And then coming to the professional fees, you'll see that there are major cost drivers that we had because of the legislation requirements that we have. The audit fees for the year that we're reporting sitting at 1.4 million, and also which is quite a very high amount for us. And also we've got other commission research and so on, and other consultative costs and risk management, because as the legislation requires to have those things. And then in terms of the operating expenses, you'll see that other expenses for us to run the commission, as I've highlighted earlier, like challenges, IT is then 11% of our budget, and it's something that we need also to look and to have a focus on. And also office premises is 25% of our budget. It's one area that the commission secretary has highlighted that we are trying to put some savings there by cutting, reducing the office space, but we have challenges also in terms of putting that process to finality. And then in terms of the MTF allocations and the funds that we've been requiring in the previous financial years, you'll realize that this is a situation. We wanted a stable budget around 40, 42 million. But we have been getting less than that. But I think these are just the highlights that we have in terms of the financial statements that were part of the annual report. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Chairperson, I think that is where our presentation ends. So we have ended. Recommend to the stakeholders that the commission
is not functioning up to the expected act, because there's an act which is the Money Bill Amendment Act, which they are supposed to operate under or within it. They are also expected to provide recommendations to all three spheres of government on financial and fiscal matters. Now, how are they going to deliver those mandates tabled by X if this is how they are operating? So I would just, I think, before I go to the question, they have to give us at least three reasons why we must not determine that we must close down. Now, coming to their report, to prove what I'm saying, Honorable Chair, page 98. That is now from the AG's report. And point number 9, irregular expenditure. An entity operating such as fail to follow the procedures towards procurement, what is nature? Was it deliberate? Was it due to lack of capacity? Why? Why was that? Talking about the clearance certificate, a clearance certificate is a technical document that if any service provider cannot pass phase one of technical assessment before you even go to the next step, which now they take the value of the contract and other things, that alone is actually saying the entity doesn't understand the meaning. Coming to the compliance with the law, Honorable Chair, they are really what the Auditor General has actually said. It is so true in that the laws are there for them. The Money Bills Act, it says, it stipulates clearly whatever money has to be aligned with activities, it has to be recorded. There should be an oversight. All that is within the Act. And I do agree with what has been happening, but the reason what we want to know and understand from the Commissioner, why there was no compliance to the Act that articulated. A going concern. Point 11. The day the Commissioner, you know, if the liability exceeds the total assets, can they explain to us how are they going to be sustainable? Can they also be specific and give us their internal control measures that are there and how effective are they? I'm sorry, Honorable Chair, I'm going to page 115. Page 115 is the under expenditure 2011. Employee cost, the 22 million. I think it's not today, but we would love to this to be broken down and be given into detail. And as you go down, you look at the staff loan. Do the Commission have the policy on this staff loan? This is 3.3. And if you look on the 114, page 114, interest received, on the interest, it says interest on staff loan is 3.3. What is the meaning to that? What is this? The staff loan on the other side and then becoming interest received, as you see. Now, how on earth a Commissioner can do a late payment of tax? Don't they have a person in charge of that? Do they have capacity? I think that's the question we need to ask ourselves. Do they have the capacity? Page 117. Oh, I think there's something to talk about there. Let me go to page 119. Page 119. Page 119, Honorable Person. You look at the salaries of an executive commissioner. In 2010, in 2010, it was 1.0, and for the other executive commissioner, it was 950. And you look at 2011, I don't know whether it's an error, from 1.87 to 5.98, is that what happened?
Thank you, Chair, and I'm actually my colleague's sentiment, and I look forward to answers. We are very disappointed about the 80s report, and I'd just like particularly the issue relating to, on page 99, procurement and contract management. Now there's a massive emphasis there that was not highlighted or explained, and that is item 18. Contracts were extended or modified to the extent that competitive bidding processes were circumvented, contrary to the requirements of fair, equitable, transparent, competitive, and cost-effective supply chain management system. Again, the question arises, what happened there, and is it again a capacity problem? And I just align myself with my colleagues. Question, obviously the next page, 100, which relates to the accounting officer, item 23, did not exercise adequate oversight. That's a question that is already, I want to just repeat that as well. Those are concerns that we need to address, particularly in view of the high esteem that the Commission enjoys in the public sight and the good reports that have been given in the past and which I find very useful, but this is very disappointing. I'd like to also ask a question about slide 27. And that relates to your operating expenses. Now, bearing in mind that you've got these budgetary concerns, I notice you're trading at 23%. Could you give us a figure? What is the amount spent on traveling? And I appreciate you need to travel as well, but what is the amount? Is it foreign travel? Is it domestic travel? And then there was that issue relating, just to get back to that issue of the going concern. I think the question has already been asked, but the issue of that 3 million that was referred to, and that's on page 199. You said there was a legacy issue there as well, but I understand here that they're talking about, as of that date, there's a net loss of 1652. During the year ended 31 March, and as of that date, the Commission's total liability exceeds its total assets by 3 million, and that is the concern about the going concern that has already been expressed. But thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Sebastian. Without repeating what the previous speaker has said, especially in an institution and organization like this, which has a cross-cutting mandate. In the past, the FSC used to be one of those institutions where provinces and municipalities would bank on in relation to their activities and how they should function. Now it's just one question that we must ask ourselves. Do we really have FSC? It's $1 million question. And the report is very clear. And the presentation is very explicit to present its ideal situation, which is very appalling, where there is no government, where an old starter even at the lower level. And I explained it is that anything. Otherwise, there should be nothing that is actually taking place here. You don't even begin to ask as to whether they understand as to what the priorities of government are. Well, if they don't have decision-making structures, you can't ask them to say why do they understand on personnel. It's just that you have warm bodies that are there that are just kept to earn money, because really there's no other way. Otherwise, in terms of them being a legal entity, really, if as this committee we can't pronounce precisely on that, to say Department of Treasury, when last did you hear that you have an NFC? It's a $1 million question. Well, to say, would Honorable Madlamini give some reasons why can't you be disbanded or be declared as a graduate of ICU? I mean, it's a question that does not belong to you. You won't have that capacity. You won't have that authenticity to say we must remain. It's just that it's out of heartfulness to say what is it that can be done to ensure that these room bodies that are here are not out in the street. Otherwise, in terms of structure, there is no structure, there is no office, there is no institution, there is no nothing like FFC. You don't even expect any performance when there are no room bodies, there are no starters. Then.
No, Chair. I'm noticing that in this report, in your pie chart, I was trying to calculate that your traveling cost, including your premises, it consumes almost half of your budget.
Mm-hmm.
Is that all? Before you start operating, just traveling and your premises space. If you add the two, it takes half of your budget. How do you intend to rectify this? Well, to me, this is not all. Traveling and premises.
You already issued around the higher level of ratings in the organization. When are you planning to fill from the commissioner's level? What is the succession plan? We know that these people are going to resign or their term of office ends in this period. But what is the plan? Why must you wait for a year for the post to be filled of the commissioner? What is the policy around that area? The other one on performance is there are areas where you have not met the targets that you have set for yourself. And the reasons that are given there is the lack of resources, or you did not have the right person for that job. My question then is, when you identified this target, didn't you think of those areas that for you to be able to execute this activity, you will need these resources? Why then do you realize that at the end of the year that you can't implement this because you do not have enough resources? We need an explanation around that. On page 18 on attendance committee, I know that some of the people have resigned, but I see the high level of non-attendance, but if we can get explanation whether people have resigned or there are reasons for people not attending. And what is the policy that if the person doesn't attend the meeting, and let's say for 50% of the meeting that is scheduled and the person doesn't attend, what is the policy to deal with the question? And maybe in the future, Chairperson, if we can be provided with the remuneration policy of the institution so that we can be able to engage deeply on issues of the remuneration and cost.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, honorable member, for the comments and also for the concerns that have been raised. I am supposed to give three reasons why the commission should not be closed. That's a very difficult question for me to respond to, especially if it's put simply against some of the highlights from the Auditor General point of view. I would have wanted to put it against what it is that the Commission produced in terms of its legal mandate. Not simply focus on the aspect of what the Auditor General says about the books, the status of the books, and the performance against the targets. I would find it very difficult to actually find three reasons why on the basis of that. If I had a qualified report, which basically says you have done a very poor job. If I had that kind of a report, then I would be able to say whether or not this is worth a living. I understand that there are issues, most of which require management intervention from the accounting officer of the organization. I think in terms of the response to the various issues that were raised. Part of the problem that we have, honorable members, is that, as I highlighted, our finance division is very weak. The compliance requirements in terms of treasury regulations and the kind of people that we have in the finance division is not consistent. When I actually came in as the acting chairperson and chief executive, I highlighted one key problem with the commission is that you've got a chairperson who is also the chief executive, so the decisions are strictly the chairperson and chief executive's decisions. Now, when those decisions are made, management has to implement. When I actually came into the system, and first thing that you do is you take stock of what is where and who reports to who and what is the status of the issues, because some of the issues that are raised here, you trace them back to the last previous year's or prior year's annual report. You will find that a number of them still are there. And these are issues that we as management, as somebody who comes in to try, and you need to come and put together a plan on how you're actually going to address those kinds of issues. And some of them require a total restructuring and revamp of a division. Now, if you have a finance division that is not functional, and I can tell you that three people that are actually working in that finance division were people that were dragged from the general kind of stuff in the commission, that have been working for the commission for a very long time. We had to then say, can we train these people? Are they trainable? We then decided to train them to actually assist the CFO. The situation with the commission is that the CFO function in the past had been outsourced. So when the current CFO came on board, he basically came in and worked alone, and most of the little things he would actually work with outside people. Now the commission took a decision. We need to have all of these functions internally. And internally we then have tried to fill in the posts, but we couldn't get the people on the basis of the resources that we had. Obviously, if you continue with the outsourced approach, the prices also out there are actually rising. Now, if your budget is not responsive to that, but the compliance issues, the Auditor General, some of the issues around supply chain management are pretty new issues that must be implemented, and you need that capacity within the organization. And for an organization that does not have the human resources to actually be able to do that, it's not been a very easy journey. So we basically starting from that basis that I must actually say, in terms of the financial management issues that have been raised, those are the challenges that we actually face. We have a program of action that we've actually started rolling. We have approached the National Treasury, for example, to provide us with technical assistance in restructuring our finance division and assigning somebody, because the Commission has that power in terms of the FFC Act to request from a department assistant where we feel that we have a weakness, and we have requested the National Treasury to give us somebody to assist in the finance division to deal with some of the issues that have been raised there. With the matter of, there's a question that says the issue around procurement and why we actually kept the contractor that we had. And by the way, the procurement issue that is raised up front, which basically is raised as a matter of emphasis, that's the irregular expenditure matter, is the one that runs through this. So it's not like there's another one, a second one. It's just the one contractor that we had. It's called Hands Trade. That was basically doing our IT system. Let me give a background to how that organization came to be hired. That organization came on board, I think it was in March, when the previous chairperson was in place. They were engaged as a result of failure, complete failure, by the contractor that was sitting with the budget, because they said the budget that we were paying them, they couldn't continue with that. So they reduced the amount of effort that they were putting in keeping our system going. At a very short notice, this one was appointed on grounds that they were actually going to produce their tech certificate, because you have to act as, it's an immediate thing. Somebody walks out on you today, somebody comes in with a copy of a tax clearance certificate and says, I'll supply you with a new one. They were then engaged in that particular fashion. And when they actually got into the ground, they actually then discovered that our servers
were actually totally destroyed with viruses and all sorts of things. They required to replace them, but they also needed to protect the information that was there, and they had to, we had to keep them and extend their contract, not because we did not want them to compete with anybody, but because we wanted to protect the commission's information. I would say that when I actually came on, the first thing that I said was, let's terminate this contract. And I was then showed the documents, what they were actually doing at that particular point in time. I then said, let's get CETA to come and evaluate whether terminating this contract would actually prejudice the commission's performance and the information that the commission is keeping at this particular point in time. And the advice was, don't do it. So partly that advice, I actually took it, and I had to take a decision against the criteria that are there in terms of the relevant section that is quoted there. Not one criterion, the number of them. It allows some discretion, some degree of discretion, if there is some effectiveness consideration that you must actually consider as an accounting officer. And that decision was taken in that context. On the proviso as well, that once they have fixed the servers, the contract will be terminated, and that is exactly what happened. The issue of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, that was no fault of the commission. It wasn't the commission employees not paying to SARS. It was SARS misallocating money in their own site. We know very well how, when it was, this was an issue that was raised in the previous year. The correction that we put in place was to say, instead of waiting for the 7th, which is the day by which SARS expects people to have lodged their money, you now have to pay, when you release the payroll, SARS money must also go at that particular point in time. So our payroll comes through on the 25th. And SARS must be paid anywhere between the 25th and the 1st of the month. That's a system that we put in place to deal directly with that particular issue. So when the Auditor General came, SARS has actually imposed those penalties. And they don't take time. They don't waste time. When they impose the penalty, they take their money. Now, when the money is taken and the AG comes in, we explain to the AG that we have actually lodged an objection on this particular charges. And what happens is that they must actually deal with it as well, and we can't control that. By the time they responded to us, agreeing with us that we have, this was no fault of ours, it was a fault of theirs, the Auditor General had already completed their exercise. So it was not, it is not an issue that we created. It was an issue that was created by SARS and corrected by SARS. Unfortunately, it happened after the AG had finished the work that they were doing. So that is why it remains there. They did indicate, however, that they will come back to us after. They will come back to us to actually check on that and then correct that particular point. That's their first quarter audit, that they will come and correct that particular point. So for purposes of this discussion, Honorable Chair, the issue of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure is actually academic. There was a question that says the need, what do we mean by the need to correct perceptions about the commission? Now, we did indicate when we presented our strategic plan earlier in the year to this committee that we carried out a stakeholder perception survey around what stakeholders of the commission think of the commission's work and whether what the commission does is useful work. That perception survey indicated what different stakeholders of the commission think of the commission, and so all we are saying is that we need to deal with those perceptions so that our stakeholders understand exactly what the commission does.
Some stakeholders, for example, coming out of that survey, believe that the Commission's recommendations are binding. The Commission's recommendations are not binding on the Treasury. Commission's recommendations are not made to the Minister of Finance. The Commission's recommendations are made to Parliament. Whether the Commission's recommendations are implemented by government or they are not, is not the Commission's responsibility to do that. It's Parliament's responsibility to process the recommendations and engage with government on how those recommendations are received or are perceived. So we need to engage with our stakeholders so that they understand that kind of a distinction between the Commission, government, and Parliament. The recommendations are made to Parliament and the provincial legislatures, and that is the key issue there that I think I need to respond to. The issue around the professional fees, the question was, we've got these fees, external audits and also internal audit. Do we have internal auditors in the Commission? No, we don't. We actually outsource the internal audit function. Now, what happened is that the fees for the audits, the total audits, are linked. So the number of audits that the Auditor General does also sets a benchmark for what the internal audit function must do. So the issues that are raised by the Auditor General in any one year must then be followed up. So the internal audit function will be following up on those. And if it's an outsourced function like we have, then the number of audits that the Auditor General performs would have to be matched by what internal audit does, even before they do what we have actually determined they must actually do for us. So the issue of these fees basically requires some degree of control from our side, and unfortunately we can't control what the Auditor General does in terms of the external audit function. They also outsource it for us. And obviously the cost of doing that are quite high. We have engaged with the Auditor General on this particular issue. And as I speak to you right now, we are still engaging with them, looking at ways through which we could, as a commission of our size, be able to contain those audits. So one of the new development from the Auditor General that we've actually now been informed of is that they will gradually phase out these outsourced auditors, and so we will be audited directly by the Auditor General themselves. So that might actually work in a positive direction in terms of the audit fees that we must actually pay. We are also looking at whether it's possible for small entities like the FFC with a small budget to have a cap. Let's say you have a cap on beyond this kind of a percentage, because 8% of the FFC's budget going on audit fees is quite a significant amount of money in terms of the number. Now let me go to the issue of traveling, and that was traveling and accommodation or office premises. Traveling for the Commission is actually a key input, and the traveling that we're talking about is domestic travel. There's very little foreign travel that we do at the Commission. We actually stopped doing that, I think, in must have been 2003, when we used to have staff training programs, sending staff overseas, commissioners going on learning visits and all of that. We don't do that, we can't afford it. In terms of the work that we do, I did indicate that we've expanded the work that we do on local government. You cannot, for example, do any research on local government if you've never been to a municipality. So our research team must go to these things. Our commissioners occasionally must go with the members of parliamentary committees on oversight visits to actually be able to pick up what the key issues are that municipalities are grappling with. This is a deliberate strategic direction that we took in terms of our stakeholder interaction program. We found that sitting in our offices in Midrand and then walking to Cape Town to come and present our recommendations without actually having been to any of the provinces, to any of the municipalities, and coming here on the basis of desktop research to come and say this is what is happening and these are the recommendations that we're making, that would be a farce. So the increase in the travelling that you see is linked to the key strategic objectives of the Commission that we have actually decided to adopt as a strategy in terms of how we do our work. The issue around the premises, I must say that at some point the Commission took a decision, I think it must have been in 2006 or 2005 in fact, that it was actually going to expand. The decision that was taken then was meant to increase the staff complement of the airport. In fact, I think if I look at that, those numbers, when I looked at them, the Commission was supposed to double in size, from 30-something to about 60-something people in the Commission, with a whole range of functions that were being created. And in doing so, the office accommodation, we were sitting on the first floor of a building, occupying half of that first floor of the building. We doubled that office space. That office space was doubled at that particular point. In 2008, we engaged with the National Treasury, having realized that there was going to be no money. And that links to the 3 million rand deficit that we're talking about, the accumulated deficit. The money was spent before the Commission actually has the money. So there is a history to that three million rand, is that the money was spent, and then the correction for that was a correction in an adjustment budget. That was meant to make sure that the Commission is able to function till the end of the year. But the Commission was required at that particular point to restructure itself, so that it goes back to where it was. So there was supposed to be some restructuring or structural adjustment, for lack of a better word, of the Commission in terms of size and in terms of commitment. So that 3 million rand that was given was meant to plug the gap in that particular financial year. Coming back to the following financial year, it had to be cured back from the Commission's allocation. So let's say you had 20 million, I find that you've got a 3 million gap to take you to the end of the financial year, then I give you that 3 million. And then I say your MTF allocation was this. So in the meantime, you must readjust. If you don't readjust by that particular point in time, it's your problem, because that 3 million is going to come out of your next year's allocation. So instead of having 20 or whatever, you have whatever you have been allocated in the MTF, less the 3 million that was given to you to plug the gap. So that adjustment was not a very easy process, because it involved people. You had to fire people. And that has been a problem that from our side, after having noticed that this is where it's going, this Commission, having decided that, look, we cannot expect that we will get this money if it has taken such a long time to actually get it to close this gap. We cannot expect that. Let's take some hard decisions. We have taken hard decisions to reduce. We've got an office here in Cape Town. To reduce it, we want to cut it by half. And we want to cut the mid-rent office space also by just above half. We have taken those decisions. Unfortunately, the lease agreement that was entered into here in Cape Town was entered into with the PIC. Is a lease agreement that goes on up until 2013. The managers of that building have refused for us to actually reduce the office space. So we have no way out of that lease. The list that we have in Midrand, and I must say here that at this point I am actually very worried for the Commission because we are now on a month-to-month basis. That list expired in June. 6 months before the list expired, when I picked up the discussion, we had not taken the decision to reduce the office space, but we knew, we were now aware that the lease was actually expiring in June of 2011. So it was the most opportune time to actually say, when this lease expires, we're not taking this other office space that we don't require, we only renew for what we require. And we put the necessary documentation, I made sure that that is done in as early as possible, that was done and submitted to the Department of Public Works. And up to today, there is still a discussion between the Department of Public Works and the property manager. The lease has since expired. Property management company, we're talking to them. They can't sign because DPW says they are non-compliant to BEE. They are BEE non-compliant. They say they are compliant, but they just listed at the JSE. So it's a discussion between the two entities. But in the meantime, in terms of my agreement with the Commission, I'm not supposed to be paying rent on that other part of the building. Where still a commission like the Financial and Fiscal Commission cannot afford to be sitting on a month-on-month lease, because if this property building owner decides today that, no, you know what, we don't want to continue this discussion anymore, we found somebody who wants this building at, on our terms, we are out in the cold. We have been communicating with the Department of Public Works. It takes so much time to actually deal with that. Now, that I'm talking about here, our plan B to try and deal with this going concern or budget deficit issue. It's not been very easy. The issues around, let me just see what else I wanted to talk to before I ask my fellow commissioners to make their points, and then the CFO and the secretary will then talk to specific issues. There's a question, I think the honorable member here says, as the FFC, do we actually have an FFC, or do we just have warm bodies that are kept to earn money? Yes and no. We have warm bodies in our finance division that I've already mentioned, that, and I wouldn't be as harsh as to say they are just kept to earn money. The key, the core business of the Commission is in the recommendations, is to make its recommendations and respond to requests from government, from Parliament, from its key stakeholders in terms of advice on these particular on particular matters relating to its mandate. And I think in terms of that, I think the people that we have are actually earning their money, because the recommendations are there, the responses or the stakeholder request submissions, we have not actually reached a stage where we want to say no to a request. At this point in time, we're dealing with the request on the NHI. That has taken a very long time in discussion, but when it comes out, the Commission must respond, and we must respond immediately. It's not like we're going to have 5 years to actually respond to that. Now, if we are not prepared, if we don't have the right people in that area of the business, then we'll be having a problem. But we are very confident that in the core business of the Commission, which is making sure that we provide the recommendations in terms of what the legislation requires us to do, and we provide recommendations that make sense, I think we are doing a fine job. So I wouldn't put those people and say they're earning money as home bodies. On the other side, you might want to say that, but again, I'll say it too harshly, because the context that I've painted in terms of what our finance division looks like, it's something that we were building. Then now you have all of these other things, procurement issues. It's a key
It's one of those priorities of government to deal with procurement and corruption. And I must say that in terms of the SFC's reports, including the Auditor General's report, there is nowhere in the report where it is mentioned or even hinted that there is some hint of corruption that is going on or some hint of stealing that is going on. It's really about getting systems that must actually be functional. It's about complying with the laws and regulations. And the compliance issues, I must say that we in our response to that accept the weaknesses that the Commission has, and we also putting in place certain measures that against which we must measure ourselves and against which the Auditor General must measure us. We have actually done that and put those things in place. Let me ask Commissioner Savage, do you want to?
Within 8 days this evening, I've got a flight to catch. I couldn't change my flight, the loaded flight to Durban. Madam Chair, I just wanted to just reiterate the Chair, acting Chairperson's concerns concerning the committee. I think, first, on the issue of governance, I think generally there's been good accountability from our perspective, the Commissioners, in terms of what we've seen. There's been good responsiveness in terms of appreciating the administrative weakness that they are. I think certainly we've actually got an audit committee as well as a human resource committee that actually is taking serious steps to actually make sure that we actually address this inherent deficit that we're carrying through. And I think you've actually heard the initiatives in terms of actually reducing office space, reducing travel costs, trying to actually reduce the actual human resource costs. But it's a question of how much of work do you do. I think to actually fulfill the legal mandate, it's actually a very tight balancing act in terms of actually keep an ongoing concern going with actually all of the actual functions that we need to perform. I think clearly in terms of the issue around particularly the SCM, I think it's one issue, and we certainly appreciate the issue that's being raised, but clearly as Bongani has indicated, all of the other supply chain processes, there have been no issues raised around. And certainly to us as commissioners, no issues have come forth. I think we clearly, one must appreciate the context in terms of both the finance function as well as the internal audit being outsourced. And that's something that now that we've really insourced it back into the operation, we'll actually put in place the necessary systems. So, Madam Chair, I just want to reiterate from the governance point of view, from the accountability point of view, I think that certainly the actual administration has been very responsive. There's not been anything that's kicked under the carpet. We've really made sure that they've actually appreciate the challenge that we have. And we do agree with you. We've really got to set the tone for the rest of the actual government departments in terms of certainly being the FFC. People look to us for advice, so we certainly need to make sure that our own house is in order, and we certainly tried to actually make sure that that did happen. It's just unfortunate that we had the two incidents, one with SARS and the other with the SCM issue around the IT, that has really marred a good report otherwise. And I think there's some issues in the financials, which we've actually also picked up, which we'll also remedy in the year to come. But we certainly do appreciate the concern, and we'll certainly make sure those issues are remedied going forward. Thank you.
No, I mean, I think that my other commissioners have dealt with the issues. I'll just add 2 points. The first is that I think I would urge the committee to look at our recommendations and the technical work that we do. We're very proud of that work. We think it's cutting edge work. We think it adds real value to government. It adds real value to the country. We have made from looking at macroeconomic issues to specific issues related to local government across a broad swath of public policy related to the management of public finance. I think we've made very valuable, useful recommendations that have been taken up by government. And they're not just recommendations that are drawn out of thin air. They're backed by solid research. Solid, often quantitative research, increasingly data-intensive, data-hungry research. So we're proud of what we deliver. We think we can always do better, and we drive towards it. So I'd urge the committee to look at the specifics of our recommendations and even the technical reports underneath them. I think that the questions raised in the Auditor General's report this year have been taken extremely severely by the Commission itself. The issue with SARS was a frustrating issue because that, quite frankly, had nothing to do with us. It's, you arrive to find someone throwing a bottle of paint over your, over your work, and no one you'd be caught in that situation, and it's reflected here. We did, in fact, as I recall, as this issue emerged, even the commission discussed it. We said, can we not talk to the Auditor General? And SARS has effectively admitted what's going on here, but it's a question of the formal communications not being in place. Can we not delay the closure of the audit so that the issue doesn't occur? Apparently, that's not possible. So it's a bit of a red herring, that issue. The issue on supply chain management, while I think that the Commission did condone what happened in the case of this year, it did so under a bit of duress. We deal with a very creaking IT infrastructure that is critical for our work. It's very critical for our work. There was a period in the middle of the worst of the IT crisis where, in fact, the Commission was offline, for all intents and purposes, for up to a day or a day and a half at a time. It was very, very difficult. Emails weren't working and so on and so forth. For an organization of this nature, one has to take action, and the action had procedural flaws in it. One of the things that the Commission has requested is that we do a thorough review this year of our supply chain management practices so that we streamline, we risk manage effectively, and that we get value for money out of our procurements while making sure that we are compliant in all respects with the law and regulatory requirements. And that we are that in the case of all of our other procurements. And we're proud of that compliance. That's not an excuse for missing once. We did miss in this case, and we are taking steps to resolve that.
Yeah. Can I just let me respond to one question from the chairperson that you raised around the vacancies in the commission?
And unfortunately, as a commission, we have absolutely no role to play in the appointment of commissioners. The commissioners are appointed by the president. We, as a chairperson of the commission, I can sensitize. I can only go that far. I can sensitize, inform, and try and say to the minister, if you want names, I can actually provide you with the names that I think you might want to take into consideration. But that's as far as it goes. Now, this is an issue that we have been having discussion with the minister, I even met with the DG in the presidency to actually speak about this particular issue. So these are issues that we know that there's a process that is in place. But when that process is going to come to finality is what we do not know. So I can't, in terms of succession planning, again, people are appointed on a five-year term. There's no guarantee that if you are here for 5 years, then for the next five, you can get a second term. There is precedence for second terms, but sometimes people just don't get the second term. So that's an issue that, in terms of continuity, we can't actually do anything about it. I know that there were some recommendations in terms of the ad hoc committee that looked at the Chapter 9 institutions, but the FFC, even though it's not exactly Chapter 9, was also part of that process, and some of the recommendations coming out of that are recommendations that we have supported ourselves, and we have actually made a submission to the minister about what we think must actually happen in terms of taking the process forward. Now, the issue of attendance, it's a big issue because the commission does have a code of conduct that it agreed to, but there are no sanctions. The only recourse that is there is that if I if I sitting as a chairperson of the commissioner, of the commission, if I am sitting there and then there is something that I see as seriously wrong that a commissioner is doing, then I can only report that commissioner to the president. Now, I mentioned the case of a commissioner who did not pick up their position, even though they had accepted the appointment, but they never participated. So there was a very long a process of back and forth between ourselves, the Ministry of Finance, and also the presidency, until we got to a stage where we were recommending, I was recommending in my capacity as chairperson, that that person must be removed from the commission. It turns out that it is not that easy. If the person has been appointed and they have accepted the process of their removal, because they are not just appointed by the president, they are appointed by the president on nomination by a sphere of government, and therefore it's a recommendation that has been made. So that sphere of government must also come into play. So if it's a national nominee, the premiers must actually be informed and they must involve the president, must set up a tribunal. So it's a process of actually dealing with that kind of a transgression, and it can take I don't know how long. So the alternative is for us to convince the person or the concerned individual to voluntarily resign from the commission. So submit a resignation, and if it's accepted, then it's accepted. If it's not accepted, then there's nothing that as a commission we can do. So in terms of what we can do, we can only appeal to commissioner's conscience that we have agreed to these kinds of principles as a commission, and we have agreed that you will attend. Now, when commissioners are appointed, they are actually given letters of appointment that basically talks about at least 4 meetings a year. So if you meet that kind of a provision, you meet the at least four meetings a year of the commission, then you've done your part. Now, the assumption is that the commission does not have too many of these meetings. The executive commissioners, that is the chairperson and the deputy chairperson, would probably during the year be the representative of the commission in any of the commission's meetings with stakeholders. And that is what actually happens. But in a situation like the one that we are in at this point in time, you've got here a chairperson who is also the chief executive officer of the, in other words, who is the head of the secretariat. So there's a role that they must play in terms of exercising all of these kinds of, and then they must also attend to the commission's business with stakeholders, for example, parliamentary committees, municipalities, provincial committees, as and when the commission is required. Sometimes you have commissioners that have time, and I must say that the team of commissioners that I have at this point in time have been really supportive. I can't imagine what could have happened if they had said, no, we are part-time commissioners, we don't have time, we've got other commitments, and we can't make it for that. It would have been a total mess. But they have been available as and when they are, and in terms of the attendance is not that bad, except for that person that we know did not pick up their position. The rest of the commissioners that we have, the 6 that we have, I think they have been fairly available in terms of that. Now, there was a question that was asked about the salary to the commissioner, to the chairperson of the commission. Chairperson of the commission salary is, what is it? Is it down to, it's half of what? He was just in place for half of the financial year. That is why it comes out like that. He was in place just for half of the financial year. Now, Mabuso, can you just give some details to those questions around the Auditor General, except the ones that I've spoken to, no?
Thanks, sir. I think I must also emphasize in some of the areas that the chairperson of the commission has already said in terms of the auditor's report and the concern that honourable members have raised around these issues. I might say that the Auditor General has changed its approach in this current financial year, and we had discussion with them in terms of that. And Auditor General himself still regards FST as the one that has always been producing good results. If I may go back to the honourable members, in 2007, FST was the only constitutional institution that had a clean audit report. And with the new legislation being introduced, and as the other commissioners have pointed correctly, that in terms of the capacity, we are only 4 staff members on the finance. And then also in terms of the resources, we couldn't explore to have the qualified staff members to deal with these new upcoming legislation issues, especially around these issues of procurement. And one of the areas that we have done around that is to engage National Treasury to get an assistance where we won't be using resources to make sure that we capacitate our staff members to deal with these issues. Coming also into details, one of the honourable members asked about the operational cost, saying half of the budget of the FS is being taken by the buildings, the rental of premises, and also travelling. That is not true. That is just a portion of the operational expenses. If you look on page 104 of the financial performance, the total budget of FSC is 31 million. Out of that 31 million, operational costs consume 8.5 million. That 8.5 million covers travelling and also the operational cost. The other costs are covered in other areas. In terms of the travelling, I think the chairperson has pointed correctly that we only do domestic flights. We're no longer doing any international flights, and most of the traveling is for the researchers that we employ to go and do the research work. There was another question that was asked by ordinary member in terms of the staff loans. The 3,233 on staff loans. The staff loan is just an
okay. Honourable member.
Oh, sorry.
Honourable.
Yeah, on the 3,000 staff loans that was asked, my apologies, Chair. Yeah, the 3,000 is just an educational. What we normally do, we normally assist our staff in terms of the study, but we don't give them bursaries, and so we can't afford to do that. We give them loans where they're supposed to pay back that amount of money within a period of year. The 3,000 that we see on the financial is the amount that was recorded at the end of the financial year that was still sitting as our data from the staff members that we normally give assistance with. I think my colleague will take us through the question on succession plans and other performance tags.
I think the acting chairperson has actually dealt with most of the things that I would otherwise have not required to deal with.
Just in terms of the table 4.7 that is on page 18 of the report, I just want to make a clarification there. Professor B.C. Tai attended 2 out of 9 commission meetings, and that is all that he was supposed to attend, because his term ended in the end of September 2010. And those were the only meetings that were scheduled. In terms of research, he attended the one research meeting that for that financial year was supposed to have been held. In terms of the strategy meetings, we only have one strategy meeting annually, and he attended that, and that strategy meeting is usually in April. As you can see, the acting chairperson basically attended most of the meetings, The only ones where you'll see that perhaps you did not attend them all are the parliamentary briefings, where, like, for instance, some other commissioners may have attended to them. Commissioner Ajam attended 7 out of 9 meetings, which is pretty substantial, and all the other commissioners did likewise. So basically, in terms of the numbers, as the acting chairperson was saying, okay, commissioners have really been committed to attending meetings, and it's only been in exceptional circumstances and only because of commitments that they cannot get out of that they were unable to attend. And just to mention that the program of commission meetings comes out 18 months before the commencement of a financial year, so that commissioners have a very early indication about when these meetings are going to be taking place, and number two, to close off those dates for commission purposes. But unfortunately, there may be other more urgent matters that come up, and as a result, commissioners don't turn up. That's insofar as the attendance of commissioners is concerned. And I believe the acting chairperson has already indicated that the commission vacancies, okay, the commission doesn't have any control over. Something else. No, I think basically we've covered just about everything, okay, because, thank you, chairperson.
Can I just go back? I need just to clarify the remuneration policy. You mean for the commission or for the secretariat? Because it's got two different sets of remuneration for the secretariat.
Yes.
Okay.
I just want to know if during that period of her not attending to her responsibilities, she received any incentive from the organization. And also the issue on moratorium,
November.
Thank you very much for our investors and understanding our challenging situation.
Thank you very much.
Great. Where is that recording thing?
The recording, yeah.